It's the Shea Anything Podcast, folks. Doug Williams alongside Andy Martino, as always. Remember, the SNY.TV Mets podcast feed, now exclusively for Shea Anything. So if you already subscribe, you don't need to do anything. If you aren't subscribed, just search for Shea Anything in the iPhone podcast app or wherever you listen to your podcasts. Click on our logo, hit subscribe. If you're looking for Matt Cerrone's State of the Mets podcast, just search for the show's title in your podcast app. And one more thing before we get going, we're going to have one voice memo a little later on in the show. If you want to leave us a voice memo or a video, go to sny.tv/Shea Anything to upload a video or a voice memo. It can be a rant, can be a question, can be a comment, whatever you want to talk to us about, and we will hopefully play it on the air. Judging from what I know about the voice memo we're going to play a little bit later on, our... How would you say this? We don't necessarily need them to be normal and or great to put them on the podcast.
I haven't heard the one we're playing, so I'm
all I know about it is that it may or may not be computerized, like a Homeland voice kind of thing.
Okay, I'm
so that's
intrigued.
What we know. I'm riding high today, Andy. You know
no,
what?
No, you're not. You don't feel well.
Well, I don't feel great.
Can I just say to the public, I don't mean anything by this. I'm not saying anything else but anyone else. Doug's a gamer.
Thanks. I appreciate that.
He's playing hurt.
I'm trying to play through this. But Keith tweeted at me earlier today. I was in the long list of names that he seems to put at the end of his tweets, along with A-Rod,
made it.
Keith Olbermann, and a couple of others.
You know, when I think about A-Rod and Keith Olbermann, I think of you,
you.
Doug Williams.
Yeah, I'm right
and
there.
Keith must have had the same thought.
I am right there. State of the Mets right now, Andy. 2-5 on the homestand. The bullpen just keeps blowing these games. And we were talking about on our show email, a couple of the guys on this team, the hitters, are doing their jobs. You know, Michael Conforto's been much better lately. Mm-hmm. Adrian Gonzalez seems to be playing well. Jose Bautista's been great since coming over to the Mets.
What did I tell you?
You were right
signing.
On about that. Right on about that, Andy. So Asdrubal Cabrera, 2 home runs on Tuesday night. The only issue is that the bullpen is A, exhausted, B, maybe not being used correctly, and C, not pitching well.
Right, and Jonas Schwartz is now the fifth starter. I mean, the pitching depth is
good
not
Jonas
good.
Schwartz reference.
Thank you. He'll appreciate it. Situation with the Mets is not good, Doug. The Mets, we're taping
How bad is it, though, big picture?
Yeah, okay. So it's funny you mentioned, and before I answer that, you mentioned Asdrubal Cabrera. Yeah, he hit a couple of home runs. We're taping this on a Wednesday, so we're doing this. You may listen to this over the next several days. We're doing this in the aftermath of an absolutely horrible Mets loss to Atlanta. Cabrera had a chance in the ninth inning after having hit a couple home runs in that game. He has, like, the worst at-bat of his life.
Yeah.
He puts down a bunt.
That's true.
He tries to put down a bunt. I can tell you that bunt was not called from the bench, and it was not called by Glenn Sherlock. Mm. That was an Asdrubal Cabrera decision. I can tell you that. And it was a bad one. And then he, you know, does not continues to have a bad at-bat there. So that was not good. But, yes, he's been great overall. Your question, though, is to what extent is the sky falling for the Mets? How bad is it? I would imagine that the talk radio contingent that's happening this afternoon as we tape is probably pretty alarmed right now. The callers that are Mets fans are probably pretty upset. And for good reason, the team has had an atrocious run of things, and they might not be okay. Noah Syndergaard is on the DL. I would personally pump the brakes a little bit on they're buried, this thing's over, forget about it, trade everybody. That's probably the best thing I can say right now. But let me tell you something, kiddies out there. I've covered a lot of baseball seasons, and I just do feel that the long season thing comes into play here a bit. They're in a very dark period. It's been a very extended dark period. After they started 11-1, they've been one of the worst teams in baseball. So I'm not writing off your concern out there as irrational. But I am saying that there's some hitters coming back. Cespedes and Frazier getting closer. Swarzak is coming back pretty soon, which was a signing that I liked and a lot of people liked very much in the offseason. Will be better than A.J. Ramos, who was awful before he went on the DL. So we could go on, but I do think there are reasons to say that the team is not dead and buried, although it's not a good moment.
Yeah, so, Andy, there are differences between bad losses coming every once in a while and they look really bad and you want to say, oh, this means more than the average loss. Right now, those are happening, but also they're losing a lot of games. So it's not just like the occasional bad loss. That's the only reason why I understand anybody who's saying, you know, blow it up, trade everybody. I'm not saying I agree with it, but I understand it because not only are these losses bad, but they're coming in bunches.
Oh, yeah, it's terrible. It's a terrible time for the team.
And so, okay, let's talk. We don't know the details on Steven Matz yet, and we apologize because by the time you're listening to this, you probably know more than we do right now. So we don't know how bad that is, his finger. Noah Syndergaard's finger, we seem to know how bad that is. The Mets are saying they hope he only misses one start. We were talking about it on Baseball
Hope
Night.
Hope is the key word.
Right. We were talking about it on Baseball Night in New York on Tuesday night. It's like, excuses for being cynical, but we've heard that before.
Yeah.
Optimism is fine until...
And they're saying, we hope. Even like behind the scenes, they're saying, we hope it's only one start. So let's just be clear that nobody is extremely optimistic that it's going to be okay that quickly.
And
but
one,
go on.
And one thing that I've heard you say, I watched you with Jonas yesterday when Noah Syndergaard's injury was announced. You basically said, and you said it a lot of times at the beginning of the season, that at the start of the year, this was a good team, like a solid team on paper. And all the pieces, technically speaking, other than like Juan Lagares and Rafael Montero, the guys that are out for the year and probably wouldn't matter or change your opinion either way, most of these guys are eventually going to come back. So do you still believe, and I sense it in what you're saying, but do you still believe that once the pieces come back, that this is a team that can compete not only with the Nationals, but with the up-and-coming Braves and the Phillies, that the division is still somehow within reach despite how awful things are right now?
What I'm saying is that they can be a team that's playing meaningful games in September. And when you're playing meaningful games in September, anything can happen. Do I think that this team is good as the Washington Nationals, who are finding themselves now? No, of course not. We never thought that. I never thought that they were going to win the National League East. I thought that the Nationals had a propensity for weird chokes and collapses, and they do, so we'll see what happens. But the Nats are better than the Mets. The Phillies and the Braves are an unexpected variable. I do think that one or both of those teams will come down to earth to some degree, and it'll be an interesting summer and fall. I don't think it's over for the Mets. Obviously, mathematically, they're not buried. If Noah Syndergaard misses a significant period of time, it's over for the 28 Mets.
Wow.
I want to be clear about that.
So this injury could potentially...
Yeah, same thing with something happened to DeGrom.
Okay.
I mean, the only reason that I'm saying that this mediocre, injury-riddled team, I believe there's 11 players on the disabled list as we speak, and that doesn't include Mats, who we're waiting a result on. I would not be saying that they have a chance if they didn't have two aces at the top of the rotation. I just think that those two guys, if they go on a run and if the bullpen stops blowing DeGrom's gems, they can be okay. And, you know, they'll have Cespedes and Frazier back in the lineup, too. It's not the 98 Yankees, but, yeah.
The only place, though, you just mentioned it, the only place I'd see no hope, to be totally honest with you, Andy, and with all of you at home.
As you always should be.
Is the bullpen. Like, I understand that Anthony Swarzak is coming back. But where's your confidence, if you're Mickey Callaway, where's your confidence in Jerry's familial lie? Jerry Blevins was supposed to be the seventh or eighth inning guy combined with maybe being a matchup lefty, kind of that half and half. He's neither right now. A.J. Ramos is on the disabled list. So I'm supposed to look at Anthony Swarzak as this guy that's going to come and fix all these problems.
No.
Not only are they exhausted, and they're calling, three guys coming up, according to your reporting here on Wednesday.
I did report that.
You got, like, everyone's exhausted. Robert Gsellman, what's his role? Seth Lugo's being brought into the bullpen, so you're reaching into the savings account to take out and withdraw some money that you didn't want to withdraw.
Solid metaphor.
And, yeah, thank you. And I just don't know where, if the pitching staff isn't healthy right now, Matt Harvey's gone, Noah Syndergaard isn't healthy, Jacob DeGrom is fantastic, but that's it, then why am I supposed to believe the bullpen isn't going to be a disaster for the foreseeable future?
I actually got a funny tweet, and I'll answer that question. Some fan said, a Mets fan, said, the Mets have just announced they've traded Devin Mesoraco and Peter Alonso to Cincinnati for right-handed pitcher Matt Harvey, which I thought was kind of funny. You don't think it's that funny. Well, I thought it was a funny joke.
It's just very similar to it. I thought back to the breaking news when you came onto the set. You said, remember, your mic was off on Baseball in New York. You come flying in. You say,
the Mets have
traded Matt Harvey to the Cincinnati Reds for Devin Mesoraco.
Yes, the famous incident when we made great TV, except the producers didn't think so. Anyway.
Producers didn't love it.
Your bullpen question, you know, you work hard, you try to break a story on the air, and, you know, you get no love. Anyhow, that's a matter that's already been litigated.
Jonas just tweeted at us, by the way.
What's he want?
No, he just says, always nice to get a very serious shout-out from at Martino NYC as possible fifth starter candidate for Mets on the Shea Anything podcast at Doug Williams SNY. While my velocity is down, I can command both sides of the plate with 65-mile-an-hour heat and can cut it, too. Be afraid, be very afraid.
Jonas taking full advantage of the 240 characters there.
I love it.
Thank you. See, this is all happening in real time. It's very exciting. It's sizzling in real time.
Back to the bullpen.
You're right on many counts there, Doug. First of all, I would be surprised, very surprised, if we saw Jerry Blevins in a high leverage situation anytime soon.
If there was anything,
it's according to my educated hunch, which is what I always try to speak with. You know, I believe it or not, folks, I'm not just firing from the hip. I'm making calls all day. You're around me in that newsroom. I'm making calls and texts all day. Am I not?
I did make a comment. You seem to be having a very interesting phone call. I was a little jealous, and you were just walking around the newsroom on your phone. I said, I'm Andy Martino, and I'm on.
Oh yeah, I knew you were harassing me, but I didn't know quite what, and I shook you off.
Yeah.
So anyway.
Educated hunch, by the way. At Martino NYC doesn't work anymore. First of all, it should either be at Martino SNY or at Educated Hunch.
Ooh, I like that. That's like Incarcerated Bob, but having gone to school. I like that. So it's not going to be Martino SNY unless the suits downstairs make
you
me.
You work here.
I know, but I've been Martino NYDN. You know what? This is a boring conversation. I'm trying to talk about the bullpen. And what I'm trying to say is that Jerry Blevins has been so ineffective lately, as he would admit, and has admitted, that I would be surprised if I saw him in a big spot. Buddy Bauman's a lefty who's coming up from AAA for Wednesday's game. Buddy Bauman's not exactly the solution from the left side, but it shows you that they're looking, they're tinkering. I think Callaway's going to look at some right-handers who he sees some favorable matchups one-on-one against left-handed hitters. But how good do you feel right now if you were to put Blevins in against Freddie Freeman in a big spot? He just hasn't been getting the job done. I also have an educated hunch that Familia, while still the closer, is not someone who inspires a ton of confidence right now either. There's not a whole heck of a lot you can do about that, but
yeah.
Other than use Seth Lugo for two innings, which created a lot of debate.
The other part about this, Andy, is that the decision-making and what Mickey has said after and before games is confusing.
Okay.
So Robert Gsellman didn't pitch Tuesday night in the game they ended up blowing. So Jacob Rahm, is it Rahm?
I say Rahm, but I mean, what do I want?
It's Rahm. It's Rahm. I forget. Let's cut out the fact that I said Rahm.
No. That's cheating.
Jacob.
No. In fact, I'm going to put a story under this so you can't. I was listening to the Yankees broadcast driving home the other night, and John Sterling kept saying Evan Gaddis. And I was like, stop.
Gaddis.
And Susan was like, very subtly, like,
John.
Gaddis.
It's Gaddis, John.
But it was he kept saying Gaddis. Called him Gaddis.
So Gsellman not available. And then Mickey said after the game that he talked himself into being available, but that Mickey was saving him for closing.
Right.
And then Mickey said, and we were talking about this before air, and we did not plan to talk about it on the podcast, but I hope you're okay with talking about it on the podcast. Mickey said that he was using Seth Lugo in the second inning in the first game of the doubleheader and did not go to Familia to stretch Seth Lugo out for his eventual start, which is coming this week. He instead, so he uses Seth Lugo for two innings, doesn't use Familia, but then the Mets are a man short
right.
on Tuesday
okay,
night.
So what, you're
so what I'm saying is yeah. if he knew that Noah Syndergaard was going on the disabled list, he has the foresight to use Seth Lugo for two innings. Why then did he not have a 25th man planned to come up, or maybe PJ Conlon stays? I don't understand.
Okay, so what you're asking is if you know that Syndergaard's going to the DL on Monday, that's your explanation for using Lugo for two innings. He's got to get stretched out to replace
exactly.
Syndergaard in the rotation. Then how in God's name did you not have time to get a man here from Vegas and not? It's not Timbuktu.
Right.
It's Las Vegas. It's a good question. It's an explanation that, frankly, does not wash. There is no dot that's been connected for me in terms of, oh, here's why. If you know a day in advance that Syndergaard's going to the DL,
yeah.
then how do you not get a player that, look, they played short. They lost a brutal game. You could very easily make it the argument that that's not why they lost the game.
Yes.
They lost the game because Steven Matz was pitching a gem. He had discomfort in his finger. He came out. Guys were stretched out longer than they had to be. But, you know, he went with Rahm longer than he would have probably liked to because he knew he was short back there. Callaway did. We're getting very minute about picking apart individual games.
Well, so here's what I was about to say in response to you?
Yeah.
And I think you will agree with this, but
I'm
not entirely sure that I'm right about it. I feel like that the batting out of order thing and everything that happened around that time, what happened in Cincinnati, has almost changed the microscope that we look at Mickey Callaway. At least it has kind of subconsciously with me.
Yeah.
Like, I'm focused a little bit more on what he says after games, his explanations for decisions, because...
You want to see if he knows what he's doing.
Exactly. And the trust isn't there. Like, and it's not, I wouldn't say personal to Mickey Callaway. It's subconscious. It's realizing that batting out of order is something that would happen if I was the manager. So, Mickey, show me a reason that you're significantly smarter than me, which he is. I know that.
But, how do you know that?
Well, I'm assuming
nice.
That he knows baseball better than I do. And I want him every day to prove it in these moves. So I'm watching closely.
Fair.
Are you?
Yes. As is the entire Mets viewing public, I think. Fair point. I think he does know more about baseball than you or I. Than you or I
do.
Thank you. But I don't necessarily think that's always translating to a move in the moment that has a rationale behind it. All right. Backing up. Trying to be real fair here. I do not think his explanation for being a man down and using Lugo, I don't think that washes. I know that not everyone in that front office has been enamored of his every move. I do know that generally in that front office, they're impressed by his general explanation of things after the fact.
Okay.
Like they say, Mickey, what were you doing? And he goes, well, X, Y, Z. And they go, okay, well, there's a thought process behind it. That's what they're looking towards. What happens in public is a number of things. And in the public, reporters and the fans don't always get from a manager an answer that is complete because of a number of factors. A manager is going to protect a player, right? Let's say that a manager doesn't trust a particular reliever at that time. Is he going to say, well, would you have used him? He's horse bleed,
right,
you know?
Yes.
So there's a little bit of that going on.
Uh-huh.
When you go, wait, what, Mickey? I think there's a little bit of that going on. There are injuries that sometimes, minor injuries that do get covered up for by all managers sometimes.
Yep.
So you go, what? Why didn't you use so-and-so? Well, da-da-da-da-da-da. You go, huh? And the answer is because he told you he couldn't go because he's out in the bullpen. He says, back's sore. You know, that's a hypothetical.
Yeah.
So there's stuff like that. I do know that Callaway puts a premium on protecting his players. So there's stuff that Sandy Alderson and John Rico are being told that we're not being told. But you know what? It's their job to convince the public that they know what they're doing. So that's fair. I'm just trying to break this down a little in terms of how this is going to happen, this does happen.
And I think the only issue I have with what you just said is that very, very rarely are we saying, why didn't Mickey go to Jacob Rehm there? Why didn't Mickey go to Buddy Bauman there? It's why didn't Mickey go to Robert Gsellman, Seth Lugo,
Jerry Familia? Yeah, it's not an injury thing in that case, for sure.
Yeah, it's not.
What if
Mickey's,
he doesn't?
Mickey's
what,
not protecting his best relievers after the game. Like, he doesn't need to do that.
What if he's not that confident in Familia, as I alluded to before? What if the full-blown saves give him the heebie-jeebies?
More than half of the other guys in the bullpen, I'd take Familia over them. What I don't understand is this hysteria over Jairus Familia. Like, I understand he's had a couple bad blown saves and he's lost you some games, but ZRA is still low. He's still got maybe probably the best stuff in the bullpen. Like, I don't understand. Get him back out there and use him. By the way, I'm going through my mentions. I'm just realizing that over the last week or so, I've gotten some good tweets. There's a new Twitter account called @MetAngry, Angry Mets Fans.
That's an cover.
If losing builds character, then I have to say the Mets and their fans lead the league in character. I'm not sure that's fair, but I got that tweet.
You know, it's always a thing because we see the Mets so much more closely than other teams. Where you wonder if their fans the team itself does really suffer more than average, or if it's a matter of perspective and selectivity. For example, the Brian Colangelo situation where he's allegedly subtweeting his players in Philadelphia. Like, could you imagine a more dysfunctional organization situation like that? If that happened to the Mets, you'd be like, that's so Mets. But I just wonder how much. You know, there's so much dysfunction generally in sports, and I wonder how much we get focused here. One of the problems is it's compared to the Yankees, who are kept under a tighter leash in the Brian Cashman year. Now, there's Cashman-Randy Levine drama that happens sometimes that spills over, and certainly Cashman, Levine, A-Rod drama that spilled over a couple years ago. But generally speaking, the Yankees don't let as much of their drama get out, I guess, which is part of why it's like, oh, Mets. Because in New York, there's more stuff.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I wonder.
I mean,
Mets Twitter's angry. I don't know. Like, if you're on Mets Twitter and you're also a fan of, like, a different team in a different sport out of market or something, I wonder what the comparison is.
We're obviously,
bad stuff happens to every team, doesn't
it? Yeah, and we're obviously not Met fans, but I'm fascinated by them, and because we cover them every day, the things that happen to them, and I said yesterday on BNNY, I said, why can't there just be one uneventful day?
Instead, you got two hurt fingers in one day
just
and a walk-off loss.
And kind of transitioning, I do want to transition over to the bats in just a second. We got Mets, Jets, Knicks on Twitter said, can the Mets get a decent prospect or two for Familia and Cabrera? I think the answer is definitely yes. But you were saying...
Not for Cabrera, but... not for Cabrera.
You don't think they can get a decent prospect for Cabrera?
Nobody in baseball wants older players anymore.
That's true.
But if you need
a second base, third base, shortstop guy, you need a switch hitting bat in the middle of the lineup and you're one piece away, you think?
I know he's having a great year. Just less than a year ago, as Drupal Cabrera stood in front of his locker and said, trade for me, I'm available to the league. And the Mets said, we would love to get rid of you with that attitude. And they couldn't find a trade for him. I know he's having a great year. Familia could get you a little something, but clubs called on to their prospects now. You know what? That's another thing about the whole trading guys situation, is that it's not 2011 Zach Wheeler for Carlos Beltran anymore. Teams cling onto their prospects. They overvalue their own guys. They don't want to trade them. They like years of control and cost certainty more than they ever have. So it's really, really hard to turn a good major league player into a bunch of good prospects.
Yes, but I was thinking about this yesterday with the Mets. If you want, this is my opinion. When was the last time a team was legitimately good for two or three consecutive years, maybe wins a World Series, without really being bad and tanking for prospects before it? That's kind of the...
Right. And the Giants never tanked prior to their run.
Yeah, there's
a
couple teams, if you go
tanked.
Through it. The Giants and the Cardinals are the two that... Yeah, I was talking about this with Anthony McCarron.
Mm-hmm.
The two of them are just kind of always trying to compete. And that's been the Mets for the last however many years, 5 years?
Well, the Mets were in a World Series.
Mets were in a World Series, and ever since then, they've been trying to improve their farm system while also definitely trying to win at the big league level, something I give them credit for.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just funny to – it's something to examine. As we approach the trade deadline, if you're the Mets, do you take this as the opportunity to say, okay, maybe we can sneak into the wild card, but we're better off for our franchise to just blow it up and get as many
I just don't think they should even consider that.
A lot of people agree with you.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I just think it's something to
you
consider.
You have – because what do you try to get – when you do something like that, one of the main things you try to get is controllable, high-end, relatively young starting pitching. In Syndergaard and DeGrom, they have it. You're not getting two guys that are that good in the next round of trades. They're unicorns.
I hope that Dave Mandel is okay with me using this, but Dave had made a great point to me last week. He said,
our producer for various shows.
He said that building off of young pitching is not the rubric anymore.
Correct.
It's young position players.
But, you know, these things always shift
look
and change.
The Cubs,
trends come and go.
The Cubs, the Indians have built on young pitching, and they haven't really gone as far as maybe they would like. You know, if you look around...
And they have Lindor, which, you know...
Look at the Astros.
Nice,
the Astros have five aces in their rotation right now, and they've all come from different places.
No, that's absolutely right.
You know, the Astros had great position players.
That's right.
Up.
Today... Another team will build around pitching sometime soon. And then like these mini trends happen all the time in baseball,
right,
the bullpenning trend.
Yes, the Royals,
they come
bullpen.
And they go.
Yeah.
Some trends are here to stay.
Right.
But whether, my point is, though, is sort of like a level beyond that, which is if you're ready to start trading off major league pieces for prospects, you have to expect that you're going to get a lower caliber of prospect than ever before. Because teams cling on to their own prospects now. So Noah Syndergaard and Jacob DeGrom might not bring you back a package that would make a Met fan happy. That's what I'm saying. Position players or pitchers.
And that
keep
would be
those guys.
That would be the biggest bummer of them all if you do decide to sell and Mets fans are excited, building on the future, give me these big prospects and the Mets don't get it.
I was covering the Phillies when they acquired Roy Halladay. They traded Cliff Lee in the same swoop of activity because they thought... we want to, at the same time, replenish our system as we are getting good. And we've got Halliday now, so Cliff Lee becomes expendable. They sent Cliff Lee to Seattle for a bunch of guys. One of them was arrested with a bag of cocaine on the side of the highway in Clearwater, Florida. That was the end of him as a prospect. The other one was Philippe Aumont, who was like this promising 6-foot-tall, 6-foot-10 or whatever, Canadian pitcher who was great in the WBC for Canada. Is this too much detail? Yes, it is. My point is, they made this huge Cliff Lee for a haul from Seattle, and everyone they got was a bust. Hmm. You want to risk that for Jacob DeGrom?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I mean, the idea of trading DeGrom or Syndergaard makes me a little sick to my stomach, but...
But that might just be the thing you caught from Gerard Musi in the newsroom.
Yeah. No, I'm sorry, Musi, to call you up, but...
I did.
Anyway, the bats are coming alive. That's the...
Joey Bats is alive.
If you can find any sort of silver lining right now, that's it. I mean, Conforto's 304 since May 7th, sitting 304. Cabrera, 315 with 10 homers, 34 RBIs in the season. He had 2 homers on Tuesday night. Adrian Gonzalez has been really solid. Mickey deserves some credit, and so does Andy.
I think I deserve
Mickey
most
deserves
of the credit.
Some credit. He's playing him right. He's giving him enough rest.
Yeah.
Not playing against tough lefties. He's been really ideal for what the Mets wanted. You deserve some credit for liking that move so far.
Yeah. They're using him well. Oh, my God, Doug, this just popped into my mind. Since you got on your high horse in March on BNNY and decided that Adam Lind made more sense for the Mets than Adrian Gonzalez, Adam Lind has been released 2 times or 3 times.
I'd like to see the tape because I don't think I said that Adam Lind,
You wanted to do a whole block on...
Look, Adam Lind's not Adam Lind.
Bring him to the Mets.
It's not Adam Lind's fault.
I said they have Adrian Gonzalez.
It's not Adam Lind's fault that the Yankees have no place for him. He re-signed with the Yankees after they did release him, thinking maybe I
have a
spot. Now he's with the Red Sox. So, yeah, look, Adrian had more in the tank than I thought.
You find a wrong opinion that I've had and throw it in my face repeatedly, that would be fine. I deserve it.
We've done it, and we're not above it.
True. We're not above much around here.
Speaking of first baseman. I alluded to this earlier. Guys in the control room, let's toss to this voice memo from Adam Choit.
Adam Lind. Andy Martino, what's your problem?
What do you guys think about calling up Peter Alonso right now? With Wilmer Flores out for a bit, why not give Alonso, at the very least, a cup of coffee at the major league level?
Amazing.
He can be a righty bat off the bench, and a part-time starter versus lefties. This Mets team seems to need a spark.
That was amazing.
Yeah. I looked up what I looked up Adam Choit on Twitter.
Is he a person?
Yeah.
Are the machines taking
Island,
over?
Mets and Jets fan. And I'm not entirely sure why the automated voice, but
I like it.
Look, we're just happy to have, I liked the pronunciation, Wilmer Flores.
I would like to give priority.
Wilmer Flores struggling.
To anyone who wants to submit an electronic voicemail, you will have priority to get on this podcast. I've just made an executive decision. Peter Alonso, I'm such a jerk about prospects, and I struggle to not be because I know people get enthusiastic about them.
Mm-hmm.
I just, like, come here and produce, and then I'll give you my time of day. I don't know. I just don't... He's a good prospect. I'm not downplaying.
Yeah, Gleyber Torres has been terrible for the Yankees since he came up, Andy.
That's not my point. Either you have a listening problem or, like, a brain problem.
Well, no.
Because...
I'm just saying, sometimes you can call them up and they're great and they help your team.
That's when they're worthy of my attention, not when they're raking in AA.
But that's, people talk about it because of the potential that they can come up.
I understand.
Obviously, we're going to talk about
it. This is what I think it is. I think that our lives often are dissatisfying and not what we'd hope them to be. And
this is like when you say everyone dies.
No, this isn't. I'm talking about life. And prospects are blank screens onto which we can project our hopes. And then people get here and we see reality, which is never as exciting as hope. So maybe Peter Alonso is just a blank screen onto which we can forget about our fears and anxieties and feel hope.
I had no idea that Peter Alonso was playing such a large role in my life.
So, well, Robot Adam Choit, what I want to say specifically to the question.
Thanks for your question, Adam.
Good question. A lot of people are asking it. I don't think it makes sense to bring a young player with that kind of, any young player really, but certainly one with that kind of potential, up for a bench role. If you're going to bring a prospect up, he should have a place to play. And he doesn't really have a place to Alonso doesn't really have a place to play right now. I don't think it's out of the question that Alonso will be in the big leagues and they'll ask him to be impactful this season. And I say that not based on the fact that I was told, yeah, he's coming up sometime soon at all. I was not told that, but they did it with Conforto. The Cubs did it that same year with Schwarber. And teams just are less afraid now to call guys up from lower levels. So this might be a real conversation at some point, but certainly I wouldn't think that you would ask a guy of that caliber to come up and sit on the bench at all, really. You got to play if you come up.
Okay. Saturday night.
You go first. You want me to go first?
Yeah, you go first.
Well, I had a lovely Saturday night. It wasn't cool. In the sense that we described, but it was.
I didn't have a cool one this weekend either.
I think we were both on the Jersey Shore separately.
We were.
We discovered this later. I don't know. All I can say about Saturday night is that I was on a deck overlooking a dune which led to the ocean. You know, those beautiful pink skies that you get around sunset. I'm flipping some steaks. I'm looking out at the ocean. I could smell the ocean. I look inside through the sliding glass doors, and there's my beautiful wife and beautiful son hanging out as I'm cooking them steak. And I thought, if there's a moment better than this, I can't imagine it. That's my Saturday night.
How about that?
How about that?
I had really similar. I grilled. Let me.
You have a child?
Sure. I don't have a child, but grilled for my parents, my lovely girlfriend. We had burgers and dogs and some grilled chicken. I grilled on Saturday night, and we watched Evil Genius on Netflix, which is a nice little four-part docuseries by the Duplass brothers, which I recommend if you like.
I like them.
Do you remember the pizza bomber story from, like, 2003? Mm-hmm. Guy robs a bank. Pizza delivery guy robs a bank with a bomb around his neck, and it explodes. He dies.
I actually don't remember that.
It was in Erie, Pennsylvania. Fascinating story. But this goes into who might have done it and stuff like that. So I recommend it.
So neither of us is cool, but both of us is happy. We don't need Peter Alonso in our lives. We're fulfilled.
Peter, I'd be happy to have you in my life. I don't think you directly affect my happiness as much as Andy might.
Not mine. I'm saying the psychological thing. Do you remember, I want to be clear, I'm not getting political here. I'm making my point. I'm not making a pro or anti Barack Obama comment. When Obama came on the scene in 2008, he said something to the effect of what I just said. I'm an unknown. I'm a blank screen onto which you project your hopes. And I believe that the psychology behind getting excited about baseball minor leaguers is the same thing.
I think Peter Alonso should run for office.
Peter, I'm comparing you in your importance in American life to none other than President Barack Obama. And on that note, Doug, I know you're not feeling well. Why don't we send it out?
Send it out?
Send it away. Send them away. Go away. We're done.
All right. Thanks for listening, everybody. Just
coming down.
Just search for coming down in 3, 2. Say anything. Search for it. Subscribe to it. And rate and review it, too, while you're at it. And we appreciate everybody who does those things.
I'm going down to the Oculus to buy some deodorant. I'm out.
Oh, boy. We'll be right back.